The Viridian Nutrition range of 200-plus award-winning products includes vitamins, minerals, herbs, nutritional oils, specialty supplements, tinctures, and balms, all formulated to be healthful, efficacious, and pure. By choosing our Viridian Nutrition range, you are one step closer to your goal of 100% wellness. Ethical vitamins with an organic heart. Available at all Browns outlets. Browns and you.
Welcome to The She Word. Conversations that women rarely have, but really should. I'm going to drop this thought in right at the start of this show, and we're going to work around this topic. But I think it's fair to say that sports in Malta are not often given a top priority. And women's sports in Malta are given even less emphasis. Yes, football always draws a crowd, particularly when it's men's football, even though the women's football team are the squad that are breaking all the records. And we do get excited when Malta does well at the Small Nations, as they did this year. But suffice to say, with only 7% of the Maltese population exercising or playing sport regularly, according to a Eurobarometer survey, sports really don't get the respect and attention that they deserve. But why do I say that? Because to do any sport at any level takes commitment, time, and dedication. Even if you're only swimming once a week, that still takes dedication and it still deserves respect. But for our sportswomen who are completely killing it in their fields, it takes discipline, sacrifice, and true grit. And whilst some athletic and sports achievements receive recognition, others go slightly unnoticed. And I'm really interested to delve into what we can all do to improve our lives with a little bit of sports, what it takes to be the best at what you do, and the golden nuggets we can all take away from these ladies' experiences and apply to our own lives. Sasha Gatt is literally breaking boundaries in swimming. At only 20 years old, Sasha has already been to the Olympics twice and only a few weeks ago smashed the national record and made history at the under 23 European Championship finals. I quote from Sasha, "I am most proud to have made the European final, Malta's first ever in this event at under 23 level. Coming from a small island and lining up with the best in Europe, finishing eighth place." Sasha, I'm so excited. First of all, I'm going to give you the opportunity in just a second to fill in the details. But before we go any further, I want to say a massive, massive congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm so excited for you. And thank you so much for being here. So as I said, in a second, I'll get you to fill in the details. Danica Bonello Spiteri, or should I say Dr. Danica, hit the headlines many times with her athletic accomplishments, but just a few weeks ago took the title Cross Duathlon AG Age Group World Champion in the 40 to 44 age group. Danica is also a sports doctor herself, having worked also in the UK with the England Football Association, and Danica is a mum. Jemima Farley has also been taking titles all over the world representing Malta, and recently representing Malta at the Small Nations and bringing home silver in the 10K. Dr. Jemima Farley has also set new race records across most of Malta's distance running races, including the Malta Marathon in 2024, and this year beating every other runner on the track to win the Xterra 50-kilometre Gozo trail race and is then headed to the World Championships in Wales. Dr. Jemima Farley is a GP in full-time practice and also a mum. Ladies, welcome. I'm so excited to have you at the table. I really do feel like I am in the presence of greatness. So thank you so much for being here. You're very quiet, but I need to warm you up. Guys, as I said, thank you for being here, but I want to come to each one of you and ask you what I missed out on. And I'm going to start with you, Sasha. What did I miss out on about you?
No, so basically, just to brief a bit, I started swimming at a very young age. Basically, my parents wanted to introduce me into swimming just to learn the basics. It was always just a hobby at first. I didn't really think much about it at the time. And my parents and my coaches always realized I was always the first one in, the last one out of the pool. I just had a love for the water and swimming in general. So they always wanted me to like continue in that sense, but not professionally. I was still very young, you know, 3 or 4. Didn't really bother
three
me.
Or four? Exactly. Wow.
And then I started competitively at the age of 7.
What?
Yeah. So it was still young, but like it was normal for swimming to start competing at 7. And I was like winning some medals at Easter meets and nationals. So I was actually like a potential swimmer. And then eventually I broke my first record, national record at 13. It was in the long distance 800 meter freestyle. And then from there, just continued going and going, breaking national records, calling me up to a national team, competing in junior.
Can I just quote you again? Yes. Yeah, they're just, you know, I just kept going on breaking national records, doing this. You make it sound so incredibly easy. And we're going to dive into in just a second. I want to find out more about your sport because you mentioned freestyle back there. So give me just a second to introduce these ladies as well. But I'm so excited that you're here. Danica, you have a massive list of accomplishments, and I actually have known you quite a long time because I actually came and did a training camp with you, many years ago when I first started running, and thank you for all the advice. I still hear you in my head when I'm running.
I get so many people telling me that. I have told them I'm running and I'm listening to your voice. I think I haunt a lot of athletes.
I think you do. You do actually haunt me on a regular basis, which is why it's so lovely to have you here. What did I miss out about you? Because you do have a massive amount of accomplishments.
Yes, I've been in triathlons 30 years actually. So 31 years.
Wow.
Started at the age of 14. I'm 44 now. I think the biggest thing I've done is like Commonwealth Games. I've done triathlon championships for small states of Europe, European Games in Baku. A number of world championships, European championships. I've done, quite a lot.
Amazing. Well, in a second, I'm going to ask you a little bit about triathlon and duathlon because I think it would be great to put that in context as well. But I'm so glad that you're here. Jemima, I'm going to ask you before we go any further, you're not Maltese like me.
No, I'm from Scotland.
With a very, very lovely, soft Scottish accent. There's lots of my Scottish friends that I don't actually understand. You, I can understand perfectly.
Well, there's a lot of Scottish people I don't understand.
Oh, you don't understand either. Oh, man, alive. Well, I'm glad that you're here. But how long have you been in Malta?
Between 4 to 5 years now. So not so long.
And this is home?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And your details, what I don't know about you?
I don't know. You know, I was a gymnast growing up and I just started running because my dad was running and he just took me for my first run and just kept running after.
That's lovely. So you were a gymnast.
Mm-hmm.
Any particular discipline?
I loved it all, but the bars in particular.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. The bars, the ones that you swing on.
Yeah.
I love that. There's such a high risk of flying off them. I'm just always like, wow, they've made it. That is really cool. Mm-hmm. So your dad was the one that, I'm going to come to that question in a second because I really want to find out about family influences. And obviously, Sasha, you've already mentioned this. But what is your sport? What's your discipline?
So I'm a runner. I like to run on the road, on the trail, anywhere, really.
Any particular distance?
The marathon, but then like trail running a bit longer.
Okay. So a bit longer than a marathon then becomes into something we called an ultra.
Mm-hmm.
And I particularly like them because nobody asks how long it took, which is great. Exactly. For people like me. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But you also kill it. I mean, you just got silver in 10K.
Yeah, that was my first time ever racing on the track. So that was a little bit nerve-wracking. I had no idea what I was doing at all.
But it was
a good experience.
Yeah, me and Sasha are looking at each other going, wow, first time, no idea what she's doing. And she gets silver at the Small Nations. Well, I'm so glad that you're here and I'm really thrilled about this.
Life is never plain sailing, but your period is one challenge that shouldn't ever stop you or stand in your way. Tampax is the number one combination for comfort, protection, and discretion. Tampax tampons are independently tested so you can be certain that there's no harmful substances present. Tampax adapts to your unique body shape to provide you protection even when you're living life to the full, because nothing should stop you, period.
Sasha, I'm coming back to you. Freestyle, you mentioned, this is, and is there a distance that is your optimum distance? You mentioned
it's
800.
Basically, it's the long distance event. So it's 400, 800 and 1,500 meter freestyle. I've also started to introduce the 200 this year, but still like a bit iffy about it. But I did break the national record, so let me maybe introduce it.
And then another one to her list.
Seriously? I did actually break the national record. I broke the national record. I might just consider doing that one. Yes, thank you. But what is freestyle?
So this is the front crawl where you put one arm in front of the other.
Okay. And that is your stroke?
Yes.
You're not a backstroke, you're not a butterfly?
No, I've tried other strokes, but freestyle is the one that just comes easy to me.
Brilliant. Okay, I'm so glad. Danica, your sports are...
Triathlon is my main sport. So I don't excel in one sport like Sasha or Jemima. I just have to put in a mixture. So I have the swimming, I have the cycling, I have the running, put them together.
That's what triathlon.
Yeah, triathlon. Right. Put them together. That's my strength. Separately, not as strong, but together. Yeah.
Makes
me stronger.
Okay.
And then we have the duathlon, which is run, bike and run. Sometimes we do aquathlon, which is swim and run. Those are the two main things. But my main thing is triathlon.
Okay. Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Oh, okay. Duathlon is bike and...
Run, bike, run.
Ooh.
So start with... depends on the type of the distance that you're racing. But you start with a run. Normally, it's a bit of a longer run. Then you've got the bike. And then the second run is slightly shorter than the first run. It's always a proportion of the type of the race distance that you do.
Okay.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. I'm glad, because that's really answered some questions I had in my head. So now I know what you guys do. I wanted to start kick off because Sasha, you mentioned, and Jemima, you also mentioned about family. And I think for a lot of people, they assume that sporting people come from a sporting family. I absolutely don't. I love you, Mum. I love you, Dad, but they are not sporting people. I came to running much older in life. I was 38 when I started running, and you know, I'd had my decades of smoking and drinking and everything before that. But then I came to sports older. So you mentioned, Sasha, I'm going to start with you. You mentioned that you had your parents encouraged you to swim, but they weren't pushing you. Were they swimmers?
No, nothing of that sort. Like they've never done sport. As in they used to do maybe, my dad used to do football, but like that's a basic. And then like my mother used to try every sport, used to do water polo, swimming, football, tried everything, but wouldn't last very long. That's all the story I know about that they tell me. So I don't have really sporting genes. But even like my sister, she tried ballet and she had done synchro. She was national team, but then she stopped. So...
We're not a very
sporty family. I just happen to be.
It sounds quite sporty, I have to say. No. But you're the one that's really pursued it.
Yes, of
Brilliant.
Course.
Danica?
Well, my mom, absolutely non-sports person. But when she turned 60, she retired and she started taking up sports because I inspired her. And people think she goes trekking. And people think, so your daughter takes after you. And she's like, no, I take after my daughter.
How cool is that?
And she learned how to ride a bike at the age of 64. She never knew how to ride a bike. She came from a family background where my grandma would tell her, don't run because you fall and hurt your knee. Scrape your, don't do anything. So she was a totally non-sports person. But then again, she said what she didn't have, she wanted to give to me. So she exposed me to lots of different sports. I used to do, when I was younger, ballet, I used to do gymnastics, piano and... even singing she took me. So she exposed me to a lot of things. My dad, on the other hand, used to be at the Stella Maris College, and he then got into the cross-country team and used to do even triple jump for his school. And he also used to win medals. I see his Stella Maris booklet. I see his timings. And this is when I was a teen. And I'm like, Dad, I'm going to beat your time. And one of them I did beat. The others I didn't. And in the 1964, he was the sports person of the year of the Slima district. So I have this, and I used to see his trophies and tell him I'm going to get more trophies than you when I was a teenager.
So you were quite precocious as a child then, telling your dad that he was going to do better than him. Did he like you for it?
He's always my number one supporter.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah. He was always there for races. He'll give me a bar of chocolate after my race. Always, so I'll jump for chocolate. So they were always there supporting me. So even my mom, although she's not sportive, she was always there and supporting me. So it came from two different backgrounds, but it works.
I like that. So two totally different perspectives. That's really cool. Jemima, you mentioned your dad. So your dad is a runner, was a runner?
He is still a runner, yes.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Cool, go dad. Yeah. And your mom?
No, my mum didn't do any sports at all. I mean, she would always say, I played hockey at school, but that was it.
That was it. Mm-hmm. But did your dad encourage you to get into sports?
I think I was already doing sports. He encouraged me to get into running. So he took up running. So his dad, he passed away really young. And I remember my dad going and having like a medical for work and being told that his cholesterol was really high. And he was like, I'm not taking medication. I'm going to run instead. So he just started running. And so it was for health reasons that he started running. And then he just persuaded me to come along. And I remember the first run that we did together, I'll never forget, because I ran, I think, about like 200 meters. And I was like, I'm dying. And he had to like coax me around the whole like 25 minutes. Oh, it must have been so painful for him.
But what a great experience with your dad.
Yeah. And we've like run together for years. And he signed me up for my first marathon. I'd never run a 10K, a half marathon. He was like, oh, we're doing a marathon. I had no idea what I was doing. So I just followed him the whole way and we ran the whole thing together. So.
And where was your first marathon? Because I read about this.
It was in Amsterdam.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, how, go dad. I mean, how cool to sign you up for a marathon in Amsterdam, which is amazing. Sasha, I want to dive into this topic, but the first question is not really for us, because I want to ask these two ladies. And then I'm going to come to you in a second, because I want to talk about sacrifice. You guys are at extraordinary levels in what you do. And I am so honored to have you at the table. But I want to just touch on the fact that you guys, two of the women here at the table, I want to normalize this. You guys not only work, but you're also parents. You're also mums. And I'm thinking to myself, and we'll come to this a little bit later on, but you know, not every day I want to get up and go running. I'll be honest with you. There are days where I do not want to get up and go running. But you guys do this. You train, you put in the commitment, you have a job, and you also have a family. And I think this is where I kind of want to dive into this idea of being committed, but also being realistic. How do you manage to put in all of that work and have a family? How do you cope with having a family? How do you cope with having children and doing what you do? How do you do that? I mean, literally, how do you do that?
Well, I mean, I sacrifice sleep. So, I mean, I'll get up early because, I mean...
What's early?
I think 4:30, not every day. But, I mean, it's much easier when they're asleep because then you're not wasting any time when they're awake. So it doesn't feel like a sacrifice.
Okay.
So
you get... So you're trained... But, okay. But you have to have good sleep to be able to do what you do. So what time do you go to bed?
9.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I get a little bit stressed out if it's 9:30 and I'm not in bed.
Really? You're the fun party girl to be around. Oh, my word. There's Jemima going, it's 9:30. I just can't. Wow. Okay, so you actually fit your training in every day in the morning.
Not every day, but like I try as frequently as I can to do it first thing. But, I mean, that doesn't work out every day. So some days... I'll run commute to work or I'll run commute back from work. So it's still part of what I would be doing every day anyway, instead of just like sitting in my car in traffic. I mean, okay. I'd rather.
I've seen Jemima run all along the coast road with a backpack going to work. It's not the first time I've seen her. And yeah, that's just a brilliant example of, not being in traffic and still getting your training. Mm-hmm. So time management, that's how you do it.
That's commitment. I mean, that is serious commitment to run to work as well. I'm presuming you've got good showers and things there.
They do, yeah, okay, thankfully. Okay.
I was just having visions of of how a day would look for you. Yeah. But that is serious, serious commitment. And that means that then you can be, I assume, be back home and be ready to have breakfast with the family and mm-hmm. so on and so forth. Wow. How does it work for you?
Yeah, I mean, there's some days now, like in summer, so I'll have to wake up at about 5 as well. I'll go to the pool, I'll do my swim training, have to be back home by about 7:15, and then I have to deal with my kid to get her ready for what we have in summer. In winter, it's the different way around, where I have to wake her up at 6, get her ready and sorted, take her to school, and then go to my swim session. And sometimes it's even having to be with a different swim group of different ability, just because of the time I can attend. Maybe it might not be the best group for me, but I have to make do. And then I'll have to go straight to work, yes. And in the afternoon, I'm dealing with work. I have my kid being dropped off at work with the after-school van. And then I have to shuffle her to, say, her gymnastics. And I'm the crazy mommy who will not be changing in the car, drop her off, push her into gymnastics. And I will go off for my, I have strictly 1 hour. So I don't have time to think like, oh, let me rest for 10 minutes. Let me look on my phone. It's like, no, I have strictly 1 hour. If she has 1 hour session, I have to be running for 1 hour. It's there. And then guests come in, so all the parents, you see them there just sitting down, scrolling on their phones, sitting in their cars, and I'm all the sweaty mommy. And my kid will be like, mommy, did you see me today? And I'll be in the last minute, I'll pop in. I'm like, well done, well done. I've watched you all the session. But really, I've been training. So I have to support her as well, because she wants mommy to see her. But that's the way you do it, really. And then it even means that sometimes my husband is a cyclist as well, so we have to juggle our training times, where someone's always with our daughter. So say like on the weekends, you know, I'll go for my long bike ride on the Saturdays, and he will take her to her music lesson. And I know that on the Sundays he will go out on his bike, so I'll try to get up before she gets up, and maybe just within my 1 hour of easy run indoors on a treadmill. I can't go outdoors, because if she wakes up, she can't be alone. That's what it has to be. Even in bike, I train a lot indoors before she wakes up, and sometimes I'll be like halfway through a session, I'll be like puffing and panting, and she comes down, mommy, play with me. I'm like, leave me, I'm training, you know. And you have to entertain the kid plus train, and you're puffing and panting, and it's not easy. And sometimes you try set a little bicycle for her, put it up along like two little books of this extra bike with like trainers too, that she can pedal as if she's pedaling with mommy.
Oh wow.
Or sometimes she's come on unbelievably the treadmill and I'm doing my interval session, and I have to get off, say, for 90 seconds recover. She tries to want to go on now, and then I say, okay, I've got 90 seconds. She can go, I put it down, and she can sort of use it. Now I don't like her using it, but you have to include her. And then I get off, and I have to go to my other, like, I don't know, 2K rep, whatever. But mommy, you're spending longer on the treadmill than me. I want to be longer on the treadmill. It's my turn now. And I have to deal with the kid whilst trying to do it. Heart run
Sasha
session.
And I are looking at each other exhausted
hearing this. I would never think of this. That's
what you have to adapt. When she was a baby, meaning months old, you know, I'd have to prepare myself, sort of, okay, everything's ready, you feed her, breastfeeding, put her on the sofa slowly, let's start training on the 1 hour on the indoor bike. Sometimes it's 20 minutes and she wakes up, so your session's gone, you've not done it. And sometimes in between rest and recovery, you get off the bike, you have to put the dummy in, okay, let's get on again. She's okay for a little bit, she's in the whatever baby jumper, whatever it is, and then the cool down, okay, my last 10 minutes cool down is holding the baby and I'm cycling. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I have a question for you in a second, but I'm just going to keep going this.
Go,
is that okay?
It.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah,
of course. I'm entertained.
We're not encouraging you to become a mum.
Exactly. Is she like helping me go the other way?
We had a show about that recently. Okay. Well, my question for both of you, because you've just said something there, Danica, and I really want to touch on this, because I had already been profoundly in awe of both of you because you are mums, but you've just mentioned you were breastfeeding and training. I'm sorry, but when you have a child, does it not have huge impact on your body. How do you go back?
I was going to say.
Right?
It's like,
how do you do that?
Like, I know some Olympians are swimmers, like you can swim while you're pregnant. But after that, I don't know exactly what they do. I didn't know that you can breastfeed and train. And
yeah, why not? There was an ultra runner. Yes. Well, I don't know if you know her name.
I think she was called Sophie. Yeah, Sophie. Yeah, I think she did UTMB.
She broke this major record and the only woman to do it. Mm-hmm. And in between, she had to stop and breastfeed her child during a race.
Yeah, that's insane.
Crazy.
But I come back to the question that I was asking before. Did you not have real changes to your body?
Yes.
Because I keep hearing about postpartum. Postpartum lasts up to a year and a half, usually about a year. How does it change you and your training? How does it change you as an athlete?
Well, I think everyone's different, aren't they?
Okay.
You know, you can't say what works for one person is going to work for someone else. During my pregnancies, I ran through my pregnancies. I've actually found like the second one easier because I could just put my son in the running pram and then just like go with him. So
whilst you were pregnant.
Mm-hmm. And then I could lean on it. So it was kind of taking some of the weight off as well. So
me and Sasha are still looking at each other going, what the hell?
But I also found after children, I ran a lot faster. I think because I felt like I needed to get home to them quicker. So I just had to speed up.
Okay.
Kind of works though.
Yeah.
I mean, what a great incentive, but there really wasn't a time where you said, okay, that's it, I'm done. I'm just given birth.
I was like, oh my goodness, I need some me time. Get me out the door.
Yes. Oh wow. But for you there was no time where you just said, okay, I'm sorry, my body needs to recover. And
another story. I think I stopped swimming, I think like a few days before I gave birth as well, same thing. The running maybe a few weeks before, just because it was getting too hot, maybe that was it. But I used to go out on my 5k runs. I took it on my own pace, but 5k and I was fine all throughout it. The cycling, I found it hard just because I have a road bike to bend over just because of the belly.
Yes, I suddenly think...
You're so impressive, both of you, honestly. I could never imagine myself being pregnant and trying to swim. No way.
We'll speak to you in 10 years' time.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's even heavier.
But even on the bike, I'm logistically... That's
exactly. Like, how... No. I don't know.
It makes you feel better, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Hats off to you, though. I mean, massive respect. And I'm going to come back because that comment you just made there, you just said it makes you feel better. Why? How?
Well, you're doing something that you enjoy doing, right? The whole reason that we do our sports in the first place is because we're passionate about them and that we love them. If we didn't, then we wouldn't do them in the first place. So.
Okay. And it makes you feel better that you're continuing with your sport?
100%, yeah.
We are going to come back to this. I'm going to park this for a second because I'm going to grill Sasha, but definitely and seriously paramount respect. And my question to you is, you're 20 years old and you have been at this for 5 years on the level that you're at now. Am I right? Since 15?
Technically, yes. But at 13, I broke my first record. So
okay.
I started at 13, seven years.
Uh-huh. And that is perfect. It's all your teenage years.
Uh-huh.
But to do what you do, I'm assuming that's also a huge commitment.
Yes, definitely.
And I'm also assuming that whilst your friends are going off to Parcheville and drinking beer and smoking cigarettes, you have to be very disciplined. So in the same way that these ladies have to be disciplined and very focused on what they're doing, how does that work for you? Because do you not ever look back and say, hey, listen, I've missed out on my teenage years?
I can't really compare to what they're doing, but like, and I have my sense of sacrifice in that sense, yes, where they, like your social life kind of is non-existent. They go out. I don't really feel left out because I kind of understand that what I'm doing gives me enough satisfaction to what maybe they're doing or where they go out or how they enjoy their time. But I have friends that really understand where I'm coming from. And if I tell them, listen, I need to be in bed by 9:00. I have to wake up at 4:30 in the morning.
You're not another 9:00
yes,
bedtime.
Yes, I am.
Definitely, I am.
What time do you... No! I'm going to...
9:10
Everyone, no Netflix for everyone. Everyone's in bed by 9:00.
Exactly.
You're 9:00?
Yes.
Wow. How do you explain that to your friends?
What do they say? Because how am I meant to wake up at 4:30 if I sleep at like 11:12? I won't wake up.
You cannot.
I can't train. Function. I can't give my ultimate 2 hours of training at like 5:30 in the morning if I sleep at 12.
What do your friends say? I mean, are there not parties and there's not ILM TV that you're missing out on and Jampoula?
Sometimes if there's a weekend, if there's like a dinner or a lunch, I'll go, obviously. But that's my kind of where I get to. These parties and these things are not in my realm, you know what I mean? Like, but I don't suffer from FOMO. Like, I've learned.
So, okay, I'm older than you, definitely. Uh-huh. But I've learned. So I was in your situation at your age, okay? And I'm saying I never went out. I did used to go out as well, but not like spending like loads of hours outdoors and my friends would be out for much longer. But nowadays, those friends who used to be out for long hours, as soon as they hit their 30s, 35s, 40s, they've started sports. And they're like now and off saying, I should have started this younger. Uh-huh. So give them time and then
start their sport.
Exactly. Judy started at 38, so 38. See, you've got just done the same thing. So give the time and they will look back on you differently.
Uh-huh, but they don't really tell me anything. I mean, they're like, we are like, come on. Like, but it's like, listen, I have other priorities in my life. Like, it's not going to make a difference for me if I go out or not.
In an honest answer to this question, do you ever think that you'll get to 35 and go, wow, I really missed out on Isle of MTV, or I really missed it?
No, not at all. I have no regrets whatsoever.
That is so amazing.
I mean, not many people at my age can say I went to the Olympics twice in my career. So I have that satisfaction in me that I completed whatever I wanted to do in my career. Whilst I don't think my friends can say that. So that's how I see it in that point of view. Yeah. Stuff I'm wrong.
There was once a coach who said, you can buy things like an Isle of MTV ticket or as we're talking about that, but representing your country is something money cannot buy. You have to earn it. You've earned it.
Exactly. Definitely. I mean, she's completely right. Like all my sacrifices and hard work and hours of training all paid off. And that's what really matters to me in the future. Even, I mean, I don't think I'll stop swimming at a very old age, but like, we'll see where it takes me.
You'll be pregnant and swimming soon.
We'll see about that.
You went to the Olympics when you were 15 years old to represent Malta. Did you know at the time what a big deal that was? Were you kind of aware of the gravity of that? Because going to represent your country at the Olympics, like you just said, you can't buy that. No. That is massive. Even for you guys going to the small nations to represent Malta is huge. Mm-hmm. But this is the second time that you've been to the Olympics. Twice you've been to the Olympics to represent Malta. You weren't aware of how...
So the first time I wanted, like, it's an athlete's dream to go to the Olympics. I just didn't know it happened that young. It just came suddenly. Like everything, I peaked quite young. So going to the Olympics at 15 was like a dream. And until I was there and I came back to Malta, it was still like, what the heck just happened? Like, just going back on all the memories now since I've been the second time, I really appreciated it more this time around because I was more mature. I could understand what's going on, who's passing right by me. It was just a crazy experience. It was really overwhelming.
I want to come back to something that each of you have just said. You've all said, right, that you're in bed by nine, which is what you have to do if you want to go to the Olympics. But you've all said that you're in bed by nine and you're up training at 4:30, 4:45 in the morning. Mm-hmm. I want to just make what you do very relatable. Because I think for a lot of people, we look at Olympians, small nations, world champions, and just go, wow, I could never be that. Do you ever get up at 4 in the morning and go, sod it, I really don't want to do this? Do you ever get that? Can you just be normal for me for a minute and say, I don't want to go to bed at 9 o'clock?
100%. It happens more often than you think, honestly, for me. Yeah.
Really?
Because it's like, in winter, it's a freezing cold pool. In summer, now it's getting really hot. Like, there's no in between. It's just, you need to have your mind, like, set on your goals, and that's it. That's how you get through it.
I'm going to come to that in a second because that's that gold nugget. That is the gold nugget. But I've got to find out from the mums over here. Do the kids up at night and they've been throwing up and you're just like, I do not want to go training?
Yeah, I frequently change my alarm. I'm just like, no.
Oh, Mrs. I go to bed at 9, get up at 4. presses snooze. Oh, now I love you more than that.
But if I can make it to the bathroom, then I know that I'll go. But it's like that physically getting out of bed. That's the hard part. But then when you're up, then it's much, much easier.
That's really interesting.
That is the hardest part of training. No matter what heart session you have, the hardest part is getting out of bed. As soon as you're out of bed, that's fine.
Oh, this is really interesting. So that actual, the reason I say it is because there's a book by Mel Robbins. She released a while ago, and it talks about the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, get out of bed. You count yourself down and you get yourself out of bed. And once you're out of bed, the action starts to happen. It's that actual getting out of bed is the difficult. I'd say 48 years of my life, I've never had a problem getting out of bed. Last 2 years, it's become a little bit harder. But it's that once you get out, but like for you, Danica, is it just days where you're just like, I don't want to do this. I really don't want to do it. Are there days where you don't do it? Yes. Are there days where you just go, no, I'm not going?
Yes, there are some days, you know. So I can say even like last night, I had to stay up late because I had to get some work done. I had ended up sleeping at about 11:30. I had my alarm at 5 and I just know I've had like a tough 10 days recently. It's a bit of a lack of sleep, travels and all. And then you had a hard swim session and I'm like, look, I'm just too physically, mentally, I'm just tired. And yeah, I did put off the alarm. I didn't wake up. But then within 30 minutes later, I knew I didn't get back to sleep because I knew I didn't get up for my swim session. And it's like, well, if now I'm awake, you know, okay. And I got back on my laptop. At least I said I put in 2 hours of work before everyone got up, you know. But yeah, there are days where just like if I have slept late, especially, it's hard to get up. So that's why I try to make it more of a priority to get into bed early so that I can get up to train. But yeah, there are days where just, look, I'm just tired. I'm just... You know, it's just that you have that little angel and devil conversation, you know. You need to do this, you need to do that. Oh, no, you can sleep a bit more. And you just have to fight that out in your head. But if you have that golden nugget, like Sasha said, you have that goal, like what I had set myself even for these races I went to. I said, that is my goal. If I have a goal, I will get up. But if I'm just training random without a goal... I'm more likely to, no, it's fine. I don't need to do this. I don't need to do that.
That's it, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's it. Because without the goals, we're far more likely to sit on the sofa, watch Netflix and eat Pringles.
Yeah.
Without a shadow of a doubt. Yeah.
Out of milk, bread's gone, and the kids are hungry? Don't stress. There's a Dave's just around the corner. Open 24/7. Or skip the trip. Just tap the Dave's app. Tap, tap, tayyip. They'll deliver straight to your door. No minimum order, speedy delivery, and fresh fruit packed with care. Dave's cares about you.
Yes.
Is that the case? I thought that was just me, but is that the case? You know, because you see people, they're like, oh, I just like getting up in the morning and going running and it's my thing. And
that's
I'm
just
like,
so crazy to me. Like, I wouldn't, if I had no goal, I wouldn't wake up every morning at 5. What would I be doing? No. Just enjoy my sleep and then go at a decent hour.
Right.
It'll be okay, you know?
So it has to be a goal. If you don't have a goal, do you still get up and do it?
Yes and no. Okay. I mean, you know, like, I don't just run for goals. Like a lot of the time, especially you know, before, I used to run, I'd always run home from work because it was a really great way of like decompressing from the day. So, but it's also like a really good way of preparing myself for like the working day as well.
That's really interesting because I have found now that I run, and by no way, shape or means on the scale of you guys, but because I run and I've taken up running, if I don't run, I do go a little bit mad. I have found that I go a little bit crazy. My husband will, he's like, how long has it been since you've gone for a run? Can you just go? Just go. And I don't know, I'm going to ask you guys, do you ever get intimidated by the goals? And the goals become too much and you have to just temper it down a little bit and say, okay, actually, I need to remember why I'm doing this. Because I think, like you say, sometimes we can get a little bit too oriented on what the end goal is and fixated on that and actually, oh, wow, what if I don't get that goal? What it, you know, does that happen for you?
Yes. In fact, after my first Olympic Games, I had a plateau for 3 years. Plateau is like when you don't just, you're always training and competing, whatever, you just don't improve. And it really did a toll on my mental kind of state of where I'm at, what's my identity like without swimming. And I really suffered. Like, I had a total mental block when it comes to racing. And obviously, because I had that perceived mentality that I have to compete and break a record, compete and break a record. And when that wasn't happening, it was like, oh no, like, what am I doing? Like, all eyes are on me and I'm not performing, I'm not improving. Like, I can't go to competitions. Like, it was kind of pointless. Like, why was I swimming? And I just kind of stuck with it. I just had to continue, like, persevering and training harder and harder until I went to the Paris Olympics. And that was, like, kind of the breakthrough. And then I got COVID. And I was like, oh my God, like, my whole life just stopped. I was like, I was training so hard for this moment and it didn't come out the way I wanted. So, like, should I just stop now? Like, what do I do? Like, I'm okay, I'm 19 years old, I'm still young, but I did everything I wanted to do. Like, my third Olympic Games, I have to qualify and get an A time, which is really hard. Like, it's almost impossible. So, like, what am I gonna do? Like, I don't want to finish on this bad note. At the same time, it's like, how am I gonna get that mental energy again to try compete and race and improve my times again? And thankfully, this season has been, like, my best season yet. So, like, from 3 years ago. So you can just imagine, like, when you don't have that mental pressure. Like, I went into it, like, whatever happens, happens. I'm just going to swim just to enjoy it. And whatever my coach gives me, I'll do. And that's it. And it really kind of helped me a lot. Like, that's how I improved this year. So,
well, this is so much one of the biggest questions I wanted to ask you guys. Because you've just touched on it. You very beautifully led me into how do you deal with disappointments and when things go wrong. And it's for each of you, because with all due respect, Jemima, you walked away from the Small Nations with a silver in the 10K. You've never done this before. You've never done track before. But you actually stepped out of the 5K and retired. And I guess I'm sure that you've also had disappointments and things go wrong. How do you deal with that? I mean, is that it? You just, because I'm trying to compute what you just said before I come to these other beautiful ladies, but you said right back there that you just took the pressure off and just, what did you just say? Hey, sod it. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out.
Exactly.
How do you do that? It's the Olympics.
Because it was such a big goal. Like, cause I had gone abroad as well that year. So when I was in that plateau, I was like, listen, there's no motivation in Malta. Like, I had no one to train with, sort of. I was just like, let me just leave. And I left. And my mom came with me. So it was a big sacrifice on the Olympic Games. And the fact that my mom left, my family, I left, and my coach came with me. It was a lot.
That's huge.
Exactly. So that was like the biggest pressure I ever had in my life to kind of make these Olympic Games. And thankfully I did. But after I didn't get the performance I wanted and I knew I was on the right track to at least get like a national record again, I was like, what the heck? Like, why can't I improve? Like, it's like the world against me. Like, what is going on? And so I was at the pinpoint of stopping. I told my mom, I don't want to see the pool this summer. I don't want to go swim. I don't want to do anything. And don't ask me one question about swimming. And my coach was like, okay, what am I going to do? Like, do I have a job? I don't have a job. Like, what the heck am I? Like, I was leaving everyone in, like, up in the air. And I didn't want to. Like, I'm not that person at all. But it just happened to be like that. Like, I just need a mental break. Like, I've done swimming competitively for so long. I've had so many goals that thankfully I achieved. But, like, this is the moment where I just need to tell you all, like, to stop it. Like, it's enough. And I was going to stop, honestly. I was going to stop. And thankfully, my coach spoke to me after a while. And then my parents spoke to me. And they kind of just, like, try go swim. Just try feel the water. Just get into it again and see, like, if you miss it or you don't. And I did miss it, I have to be honest. But, like, when you start thinking about all the sacrifices and disappointments that came with it, that's what kind of impacted me at first. Not the positive things. Always the negative impacts you first. Mm-mm. And
so yeah, how long did you not swim for? How long did you take away?
I took a 2 month break, which is quite big for swimming. Like, it's really big after Olympic Games. It was like insane, but I had to.
And that was the bit that helped you reset your.
No, it just set my body, my mental state, everything.
Wow. Okay, so it's just taking a break and resetting after a disappointment. Mm-hmm. Jemima, for you, I mean, the rest of us were just in awe that you'd gone to the Small Nations, but I know because you mentioned it a couple of times about this 5K. I mean, was that a disappointment, or were you just very philosophical? Have you had disappointments?
Mm-hmm, definitely. I mean, I think, well, you learn the most from your disappointments and from your failures. I mean, you don't, you know, if everything goes right, well, you're not going to take a lot from that, are you? You can't kind of grow from that. Whereas when something goes wrong, well, then you have to reevaluate and think, what could I have done better? What can I do next time? So, yeah, I mean, I think failure is really important.
But then how do you cope with that? What, I mean, because in the moment now, you're being very philosophical about it. But mm-hmm. but just like Sasha, is there a moment where you're just like, I am never going to run again?
No, so I didn't say I'm never going to run again. I did say I'm never going to put on a pair of spikes again.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I've only put them on a few times anyway, but yeah, I was very keen to throw them away.
Spikes but I shoes haven't. With bits underneath
little
them
spiky
track.
Things, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, just for so anyone that doesn't
I still
know.
Have them, yeah. I mean, I haven't put them back on again yet, but I will.
They're in the cupboard. They're not seeing the light of day right now. But that was your lesson. That obviously that's what you took
yeah.
away.
And even like the following week, like, you know, I stepped back onto like the track just to do a training session. And I was so nervous, like stepping onto the trap, I started having palpitations and then I was fine. And like, I signed up for a race the following weekend because I thought, well, this is probably a good thing to do. You need to just do another one. And I was so nervous on the start line and it was another 5K. But I did it and I got to that point where I felt like I wanted to stop. And I was like, you can just stop right now. Like, you feel like death. But I didn't that time, so.
For sure, yeah. For sure. Was there any other part of the conversation? Was there anything that you recall, a golden nugget? Like Sasha said, she just, in her mind, she just stepped away and reset. Was there anything that kind of really was, because... I tell you why, because what you're talking about in sports echoes across everybody's lives. Mm-hmm. Because like you're talking about your swimming. Mm-hmm. You know, when we feel disappointment and failure, maybe our career has not gone the way that we wanted to. Maybe it's a family, friends or relationships or whatever, not going the way that we wanted to. You know, just taking a step back and saying, okay, I'm not going to do that for the moment. I'm going to lift the pressure off my shoulders. That doesn't just apply to swimming. That's a golden nugget that applies to everything. For you in that moment, is there something that you decided? Because you said you learned from your mistakes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in that moment, you know, I was devastated. I was like so embarrassed. I felt like I'd let so many people down. And then I went back to my room and I put on my trail shoes and I just went for a really, really long trail run up in the mountains. I mean, we were in Andorra, like, mm-hmm. you know, I had to go and run up a hill and it made me feel so much better.
So you went back to something that you knew.
Yeah.
And can I ask you, which race was the 10 or the 5K first?
The 10 was first.
So you'd already won a silver at the Small Nations and yet you still felt like a disappointment.
Yeah.
Sometimes it happens like that. Like mm-hmm. one race just predicts your whole competition. Like I won 2 golds at GSSC, but that silver really bothered me. Like I had the first day, I had 800, I won the gold. Second day was 1.5, I won the silver, and I was really upset over it. And I got really angry that I won the gold in the 400 on the third day. So it was, I get what she's saying, and in that sense.
I guess you always want to do your best, and uh-huh. you want to do your best for yourself. And when you mm-hmm. feel you've let yourself down, like that's like the worst person to let down is yourself. And it's like...
Exactly.
You both absolute heroes to me, but I mean, because you're talking about golds and silvers and I'm just sitting here in awe of both of you. For you, how do you deal with it? How have you ever dealt with disappointment?
Yeah,
darling?
I mean, you feel that anger, that resentment. Sometimes you want to just walk away from things. But then I think I've learned over time, you just let things settle down a bit. You just try shift focus on something else. And it's the same like in life, as you're saying. A lot of the times I've learned that when a door is closed, we spend too long looking at that closed door when there are 3 open doors behind us. So I've learned to turn around, look at those open doors and forget the closed door. And that helps you kind of to reset, change the mentality, because a lot of the time it's just the way our brains are wired, the way we think. So if I'm able to reset myself sooner, the less anger, resentment I feel, and I have to kind of then find my motivation again, find that little carrot, that little golden nugget I'm going to chase and try work towards that and put that disappointment sort of there, something that I will learn from. But I think that's kept me there in the sport for a lot.
You just said that you've got a closed door in front of you. Stop focusing on the closed door.
Yeah.
Turn around and look at the doors yeah. that are open. What would that look like in practical terms so that I can just understand how that, for you, if you've had, I don't know, an event that's not gone the right way.
Yes. What would... Or sometimes even like if we're working towards like an opportunity to get a certain place or a timing or say, I don't know, I used to, when I was young, I used to try get into these like French Grand Prix races, which you're literally racing with some of the best in the world with a team, and you're racing Olympians, national champions of all the different countries, and it's really high level. And I just keep trying, knocking at the door, knowing I need to get in. And you try to see how you can get in sometimes through the window, through other contacts, through other races, let them notice you, try send your CVs. But, and it took 3 years till I got into there. And suddenly one of the times after those literal doors that I kept trying to knock and open, one of them opened. It's like, listen, do you want to race for me? Okay, yes. And I started with the Spanish. Then it's like, okay, you know, I've made a recommendation to you with the French team. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly where I want to get to. So I find that I have to open those doors a lot of the time. Okay. So it's not just everything is going to be over there for you. You have to work towards it. But if I say, oh, let me try, and then like, oh no, it's not going to work. And I just say, it's just a closed door. People look at that closed door. I make those doors open for me and I make things happen and I try achieve what I want to achieve, what I want to get up to. So
I love that. Work. So it's, I mean,
it's
again,
same
it's
with
like,
work. It's
absolutely.
The same with work. Okay. It's life. And if you want to achieve something, you just have to keep persisting. So even like, all of us, I'm sure that's in our own personal lives, in work lives, we're doing exactly the same thing, you know? We just keep striving at things, getting better. And that's why sports is good, because it teaches people how to overcome these disappointments, how to achieve a goal. And even when it comes down to your work and your life, it's there.
Yeah, I love this. I love this idea of looking at something, and if it the path that you're going in isn't working, you just look at it from a different yeah. angle and look at a different alternative, parallel yeah. thinking. You mentioned there about accomplishments and so on. And I want to ask each of you, what is to date? Was it getting into this Grand Prix? What was the biggest accomplishment of your sporting career to date?
I think it was the Commonwealth Games. I did two of them. So even just getting to the start line was an accomplishment in itself. And then going into the race, I'm like, okay, what I've managed to do, I've managed to get here. I'm going to give it the best. So I did 2014. I came 15th and I was very happy with that because it was quite a tough field, to be honest. And there were many athletes who get lapped out because it's a short bike course. And if you get lapped on the bike, you have to stop the race, and only 16 athletes finished the race. And my coach, who is an international level coach, has helped a number of athletes even win Olympic medals. He told me, out of those 16 girls, you are the only one who's not a full-time athlete and is working. The others are all full-time athletes. I'm happy with that.
Wow.
And then I did Birmingham 2022. I think I came 25th there, and those European Games as well. Those are like my three big competitions that I've done literally at the elite. Then I used to do a lot of these French Grand Prix. I got to know about them. I was a bit older, so I wish I knew about this stuff, but in Malta, no one guides you, no one knew anything. I literally had to find my own way. But I finally got into these French Grand Prix races, and you're starting like about 80 athletes on the start line. I used to place about 48th, which for me meant quite a lot, knowing that like if the one who came first, that's a, like an hour long race, and I am like 3 minutes away from the first one who has won a silver Olympic medal, I'm happy with that.
I like this.
So
brilliant. So these are the high points.
Yeah.
Sasha, high points of your career. What would be the high points?
So firstly, my first big moment where I was like, okay, like I'm kind of somewhere internationally, was when I got my first final in a junior European. I was still, 15? It was the year before Olympics. And I was the first ever swimmer to do that. And then I had gone to the Olympics, which I was the youngest ever to do that as well. And then now this final here, this year, at under 23 level was a big achievement for me, as with the older guys, you know, so it was really nice. And obviously the Paris Olympic Games and GSSC.
A lot of accomplishments.
But I'm like proud of them, like in a sense that at least all my training and sacrifices pay off at the end of it, you know what I mean?
Jemima, what's your biggest accomplishments? What's the thing that you look back and go, damn it?
I think it was probably like the first marathon that I won, which was the Richmond Marathon in London. We were already living in Malta at the time and we'd spent the summer like training for a marathon in the heat. I'm sure that probably helped. And, you know, I didn't have a coach. I'd never run on a track or did any kind of speed session. I had absolutely no idea about winning at all. So it completely shocked me to win the marathon. And then I remember winning it. And the race director came up to me and was like, "And you do know what you've won?" And I was like, "No." And he's like, "Well, it's a trip for two to the Cayman Islands." And I was like, "What?" So that was quite amazing as well.
Yeah, that's also pretty cool.
They should give us these instead of trophies.
Exactly.
You've all got these massive trophies. What you really want is a trip to the Cayman Islands.
So that the reason I'm asking that question is because I want to dig a little bit more into sports and perception of sports. Do you feel that these titles, I mean, winning a marathon is no small thing. I mean, and also getting a silver for crying out loud in the Small Nations, Commonwealth Games, Olympics. Do you feel that you as sports women, as sports people and sports in general, do you feel that you've got the recognition that you would have liked or that you think that sports deserves?
Okay, I can say. So basically,
I love you. You're like, I'm just going to jump in.
Why not? I mean, we all know that football gets the most recognition in Malta, okay? Olympic Games is a very big deal. And it did get recognition, of course. But after it's over, it's like, you're like everyone else. Like here's another athlete. Okay, you're breaking records. We can post it here and there. Newspapers. GSSC was a really big deal. It's always a really big deal for Malta. But after it's over, it's like, what are we getting in return? You know what I mean? Like, sometimes lanes is a problem to get a lane for me to train in. Like, sometimes I'm training in public lanes, which is insane. Even, like, sometimes when I was competing for the competitions to try qualify for the Paris Olympics, I was getting minimal funding, which was really tough. Like, it has come from my parents, and luckily, like, I can rely on them, and they support me a lot. But, like, in the future, I don't think athletes can really adjust between school, and that's why it's kind of fades away, sports, because they focus on school and having an income in the future, obviously, and so on.
Yes. Which is what goes back to what you were saying, is that you were competing against athletes who are full-time athletes, and I don't know.
I had no funding. Nothing.
That's crazy. At least I do get. I have to appreciate, like, I had the Olympic scholarship, but it's not as much as you think it is.
No, I was at the time I was actually working and living in the UK. So I do have, I was lucky actually to be placed in Yorkshire and Leeds, where I met my even current coach, Jack Maitland. I already mentioned him. He's got a number of athletes who got up to Olympic level. In fact, at Commonwealth Games, he had athletes from five different countries competing. Is that top a good coach? No, I had no funding for Commonwealth Games. All there was that, okay, we send you abroad to a race. I think it was Spain they sent us. So they paid us to go race abroad to kind of qualify and see what level we are against other competitors. But otherwise, there was no funding at all. So I was working. I actually got more support from England than from Malta, because I was working as a trainee to specialize in my sports medicine. My supervisors then that I'm aiming to go for a Commonwealth Games, and they were actually like, how can we help you? And they actually even offered that if you would like to reduce, I was on a training program, I had to work 40 hour weeks, and they had told me if you would like to reduce your workload to, I think it was even down to 33%, so like it's a huge difference, we are able to accommodate you so that you can prepare yourself the best you can with the Commonwealth Games. I mean, I didn't take data because I had a husband at home, even obviously I had to pay rent, income and everything. So I had to cover that from my wages, which as a trainee, you don't earn much. So I had to turn that down and still work full time. I was also studying a master's part time as well, apart from my full time work, and fund it all myself.
Oh my yeah. God.
In UK, obviously, the athletes obviously are higher level athletes than us. I agree, than what we are in Malta. But they get funded, they get sponsors.
That's what I was, like, compared to her, I do get funding then. Mm. So not to say that's like I'm thankful that they at least pay for like junior, like these European games and whatever they do. Even like a training camp before GSSC games, which is very helpful.
Yes.
But when it comes to like abroad, like I see the UK, like I see like
more.
European countries like Romania, like normal, they have so much more. Like I just went to under-23 Europeans, just me and my coach. There was no medical, there's no physio, there's no masseur, there's no nothing.
Yes. At the Commonwealth Games is the same, you know. I was there on the start line and I can see some of the other top athletes, you know, and there's like the coaches there. Who was standing in my coach's area? No one. Then actually my husband did turn up on the day to surprise him, but didn't have accreditation. And then you see like the UK athletes, they had like literally seven different people there standing. Their nutritionist, their masseur, their physio, their coach, their bike mechanic.
Mm. This is like a normal
so
thing.
So it is an uneven playing field, even from the word go. How are we meant to compete against that level of input? And I've worked in it because when I was in England, I was working in sports medicine. So I've been at English Institute of Sport as a sports doctor. So I know what input these athletes get. Are we anywhere near there in Malta? We're very far off.
But you just said, Sasha, you mentioned a moment ago about football, and football is dearly loved across the world and highly regarded. And in Malta, football does get a lot of support.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at the women's football team, which is doing incredibly well.
Yes.
And we have on the She Word hosted some of the women's football team as guests on a show specifically about that. And one of the things that they said was that they, who are doing incredibly well, 90% of them also have full-time jobs.
Yes.
So they find time to train afterwards, which is what you guys do, and which is what you have to make time for. You have to make time and work around mm-hmm. other interesting logistical challenges mm-hmm. to be able to train. So why is that? And not just in Malta, why is it that we don't regard sports as seriously as perhaps they should be? Is going to the Olympics just a bit of a giggle? Is it a bit of a laugh? Is going to the small nations just something nice to do? Or is it something that we should be nationally proud
about? People do not understand. I think there's a lack of awareness what an Olympics is. I mean, people just assume that if you train sports, so you do the Olympics, thinking it's like, oh, you know, let me just go turn up, let me just go to the Olympics. It's not like that. So even there, that mentality has to change, even from education with the Maltese population, why people exercise, what's the level, in the world. Having said that, even then, in terms of, if you take like the Malta Olympic Committee, they're trying to change the mentality and trying to even help more with funding. They're trying to put like even different levels and for athletes to achieve. So when I was, as I said, in the Commonwealth Games, that's 11 years ago, it was a very completely different picture. So it is changing, but still the recognition of what takes an athlete, what it helps to support an athlete, still a lot more can be done, but we're still slow to change things. That's what I can say. And the recognition of the athlete and what support an athlete needs is still behind. But education of the general public, I think, is one of the crucial things that it needs to start off with. Even like getting a medal at the GSSC, okay? They don't understand how hard it is. And it has to...
No, definitely. I definitely agree with her. In fact, the GSSC in Malta, the prize was 10K for a gold medal. Because there was this big fuss that we have to be first ranked out of all the countries to be first in the medal tally. And we won it. But then, like, this year around, there was much less emphasis on, like, obviously he wants to break the record for how many medals were won, but, you know, there's always less and less. I know they're, in fact, MOC, I am in the scheme where they are with the levels and mm-hmm. they give particular funding with what level you are in. And then you have to keep on improving to get more funding, which is good. Like, we are improving in that way, but it is very slow. Like, other countries are way ahead. Yes. And we're still trying to catch up.
Well, let me ask you, because I'm going to ask Jemima this, because Jemima, you have lived abroad. You are Maltese. And I recall being in the UK and doing sports at school, and there didn't really seem to be the emphasis on sports at school. I mean, albeit it was a long time ago. There wasn't the emphasis on sports at school that either there is now, or just kind of it wasn't a big deal. We played, you know, hockey, and it was a great opportunity to go out and run around a pitch. But even abroad, is there the emphasis? Is there the focus on sports?
You mean in the UK?
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's the focus on certain sports, and but most sports are from out of school clubs, right? Like, it's, you know, I remember being at school and we had quite a few people from America, and they came over from America and they would have like their track team at school. They would have their basketball team at school, their soccer team, everything was at school. And we were like, wow, you have all this at your school? You have these teams there? You know, I did gymnastics at school and no one else did. I went to my club after school to go and do that. The only sport that we had at school was hockey. If we didn't do hockey, there was no other sport for you to do. So it really felt like, compared to America, where I was talking to these people who were from there, that we just didn't have the opportunity that they had.
But there's the British, the BACS, the University and Colleges and mm-hmm. Sport in mm-hmm. England, mm-hmm. where you have even the university students, they try to get sports scholarships to enable them to go to the university. And then you get all these really highly competitive sporting events, competing university against university. Because when I was living in England, and I said I was doing a master's on a part-time basis, I got to participate in all these, and some of them were like really high level, and I know that there were athletes who were even in there that then even got to an Olympics. Mm-hmm. But in Malta University, where is our sports?
Mm-hmm. But I think also that was very much in England as well, like in Scotland.
It's not in Scotland,
no.
Neither. Okay. I thought it was even in Scotland as well.
But it's interesting what you were saying about sports in schools as well, because I remember growing up, and granted, I will say it was a long time ago, but I do remember to grow up and growing up in school, and sports was obligatory. Sports you had to do. And we were very fortunate, because I think we had 4 hours of sports a week, which was, you know, pretty good, and go out and do cross-country running and all this sort of thing, which was great. But I don't recall growing up and sports even being considered as a serious vocation or pastime. You know, it was just something you did, like you're saying, it was something you did in an after school club, and it was that sort of thing. And yet we know that sports, even if you aren't going to compete at you guys' level, it's still so, so, so important. I want to stick with you there, Jemima, for a second. And this is nothing to do with which country you're in or which country you're, you know, taking part in a sports. It's to do with gender. Because I want to come back to, and I'm going to put myself on the line for this, but I'm going to say, you know, the Malta football team, male football team, is great. We love you. You're fantastic. But really not doing as well as the female football team. Hashtag just saying. but no, I'm right. Am I not right? I'm right. I mean, the Malta women's football team is doing incredibly
yes. Yes,
well.
Yes, yes, thank you. Yes.
But it still doesn't get the attention that the men's team does. And this is the same case. And I'm going to put this out as not being a Malta issue, because in the UK, the English team, the English male football team has not won since 1966, but the female football team,
yes,
won.
Definitely.
Absolutely won. And there was elation, and of course they were running around and making a big deal, fantastic press conference about it. And then it went and died out again. Is it just, do we have, on top of everything else, on top of kind of people not taking sports particularly seriously in some contexts, do we have a male-female gender issue here as well?
In my sport particularly, no. Because sometimes I have the most FINA points out of the swimming, male, female, whatever. So doesn't it make a difference in my sport? Because swimming is quite a equal.
Really?
Sport, yes. Uh-huh.
So you get as much as tension as your male counterparts?
Yes, as long as I can remember, my teammates have always been boys. As long as I can remember. Because I like to train with them. I like to chase them. I like to get faster and faster and faster. And
do you get, can I ask a really impertinent question? You get as much media attention, you get as much prize funding if you
win.
Yes,
yes, yes. Same.
Whoa!
Swimming, yes.
That's so, so cool.
Yes, no, swimming, uh-huh.
That's brilliant.
I've had never any problems with that.
That is really, really uh-huh. fantastic. No, I'm seeing a face from Danica there like, no.
So it's changed, I can say that. But I remember when I started triathlon and I would be winning the women's races. And sometimes even with the overall men, sometimes I could have placed even with the men fourth and fifth. And the newspapers would read, oh, so-and-so, the men's race, so-and-so won. This is the race, the swim, then the run and what they did. And then at the bottom, there was Danica Spiteri won the women's race, so-and-so came second and third, full stop. And the photos were always men. That's how it started off. And I used to say, but we are doing the same effort as the men. So why don't we get the same media coverage? Because I'm talking even 20, 30 years ago, okay? So when it started, but it took a long time to try change that in terms of the media. And I'm saying time, 10, 15 years. And if there's a national championship race, whatever, and it's always a male photo, why is there never a female photo, or at least both, to make it equal? But it's changed over the years. And I can say that then over the years, yes, there was more attention. Obviously, I did get some good results, so the results help as well. But it was, I remember, a struggle to actually, report on both the women's and the men's races equally. Yeah. It's improving, but still, you have to keep pushing. What I find as well, sometimes, like even recently, we have championship races. They should have separate male and female starts. And each time to keep reminding them, look, a championship race, according to international guidelines, should have separate male and female races. And it always ends up, oh, you know, just a handful of females. Oh, just let them start with the men. And that changes dynamics of a race. It makes it unfair on the women's field. It also hinders women wanting to try participate. Because if you're starting a swim with like 30 men and someone might not be as confident in the water, they feel more intimidated. So,
and how they swim is like savage. Like honestly.
Really?
Yes. Like they hate each other.
Yes, I mean, you can get disqualified for doing that. But sometimes in the start, it gets a bit sort of...
It could be like by mistake, but like can easily get away with it.
But that's why the women need to have a separate race. But if this still doesn't happen, I have to still keep telling the federation, why can't we race separately?
You need to send Sasha just to walk in and say, because the men are savage in the water. They're just savage.
I wouldn't say savage. I mean, I've raced even abroad with especially like in the Spain, the women, it's like, oh yeah, that is what scares me. I used to get panicky and all those other ones. That, in water, it's quite...
Chill.
No. The men water were like quite chill. But when it comes to then higher elite level and all, that's where like you have to really... Because you have to juggle your place to get to the first boy.
So like...
And that gets tough, yes. Uh-huh. But now they've changed even regulations. That has to be a certain distance from the start to the first boy to reduce this. Not like 200 meters, you have 60 people to go around the boy. It gives...
long. That's okay.
But yes.
Less savage.
I think we still need to work a bit more on giving more importance to women and support to the women. Yeah, definitely.
Keep your self-care journey on track in just a few clicks with Myoka Spas. Whether for a moment of disconnection, a complete body-mind reset, or a bonding time together, book online stress-free at myoka.com or use the new Myoka app. Complimentary spa facilities on every visit.
Well, I'm going to come to Jemima because I couldn't stop just cheering when I saw you come in at Xterra just a couple of months ago and came in way ahead of anybody else, male or female. And there was Jemima Farley coming in after 50, with all due respect, I said this to you at the time, coming in after 50 kilometres in intense heat of trail running, looking as cool as a cucumber, might I just say. She's just like, yeah, I'm just going to sit down, have a little rest. I'll be fine. Off to the shopping or whatever I need to do this afternoon.
I'm sure I didn't say that.
You absolutely looked so cool as a cucumber. But I was cheering because you led the pack and you totally and utterly annihilated everybody else, including male counterparts. But is that something that is consistent in running, in what you do, trail and road running? Do you feel that there is, that you and your male counterparts are complete equals?
I do. And actually, I really love running with men. Like, I find it really helpful. Like, you know, all like my training partners are men. Mm-hmm.
And they just give you the same respect as they would to another male runner. They don't see any difference whatsoever.
Well, I guess at the end of the day, like, I'm not their competition. So,
ooh.
And they're not my competition as well. So we can hopefully help each other. So it can only be a positive thing, right?
I like that. That's really cool. Mm-hmm. That is really, really nice.
And what you said, oh, you were like leading the way. Well, that wasn't my goal. Like, there was a woman that was behind and I thought she was much closer to me than she was. So I was running away from her and things just happened the way that they did. So it was unintentional. There was just a little bit of miscommunication that occurred.
I do absolutely love your humble attitude towards winning that race. You're like, well, I didn't mean to, but I did anyway, which is brilliant. It wasn't my intention, but it was absolutely fantastic to see. I want to ask these guys a question about age. All right. I'm not going to ask you how old you are, Jemima. I'm not going there. I promised I wouldn't. But as you get older, and it's going to be a question I'll ask you in a second, but you're in a different sort of framework here. As you get older, are you finding sports are more challenging? Are you finding that it's tougher? Because there is this sort of understanding that women do really well in sports as they get older because women are more mentally able to cope with pain barriers and challenges. Are you finding as you get older that you're different as a woman in sports? Are you finding it easier, harder? Are you going to be able to keep going until you're 95?
I think it's different. So, you know, shorter races, you have to run faster, obviously. You know, you need a lot more fast twitch muscle fibers. And, you know, I didn't run competitively as a teenager in my early 20s. As I said before, I'd never run a 5K before. So I'm only just like really learning that in the last couple of years. So I'm still learning how to run fast.
So where are you settling into? As you get older, are you looking to longer distances?
I think I've always looked towards longer distances, but now I'm kind of dabbling with like the slightly shorter distances as well because I haven't done them before, and I'm learning that that can actually help my longer distances as well.
Oh, brilliant.
So
is the goal still to be running when you're 95?
I hope so.
Really?
For sure. I mean, it's something that I love doing, so why would you stop doing something you love doing? You
know, that is really interesting. Danica, does it get harder?
Harder because you have to juggle the family. I think that's the main hardest obstacle, and with a daughter. I think what I've learned as I grow older is that you have to take care of your body a bit more in terms of how you're moving, how you're functioning, to prevent injuries. But I'm pretty good at that, so I'm happy about it. I realize that sometimes as you grow older, sometimes your goals and motivation does change, which is okay. Maybe for me, as I said, as an athlete, I've had some good success as I was younger. And I might have changed my the way I look at things. And maybe that comes from maturity of you as an athlete. But I think I try always find something to keep me going, because every time I say this is my last year in triathlon. This is my last year in triathlon. And I think I've said that for the past 15 years.
So you might still be doing triathlon when you're 95. Yes. I've just got visions of you guys going out together at 95. And
I have a friend of mine where we're the same age and always competing against each other. And with Michelle, you know her. And we say we are going to be in an old people's home with our frames and we're going to be doing races down the corridor, hopping on our frames when we're old and we're never going to stop competing against each other.
Brilliant, but make room for Jemima as well in that, okay?
Yeah. I'm She'll be in a different age category.
Actually, that's true. There you go.
See, she's not a competitor now.
Sasha, I want to come back to you, something you said with regards to this age thing, because you mentioned earlier on that you peaked really early. Mm-hmm. So is your swimming career in a time frame? How long
I
do you
I would say
have?
Yes. I don't, in Malta, they don't really last over the age of 24, 25-ish. But then there's always master's swimming and you can
no,
always
no,
continue.
No, sorry. What?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Why?
Because how long? Listen, swimming, I feel like, is on a different level. Like, so you have 2 hours of looking down at one black line, going up and down for countless of hours and distances. Like, I swim 7 to 8K each session in my mileage season. And then obviously now it's kind of slowing down, but it's a lot on your body, on your mental capacity.
How long does that take?
Usually 2.5 hours, morning and evening, plus gym. So
sorry, morning and evening?
Yes.
2.5 hours looking at the line in the bottom of the pool?
Uh-huh.
Whoa. What on earth do you think about?
Sometimes I just close my eyes, honestly, and I just stay singing because I can't get through it without. Like, I want to go buy those headphones that like work underwater.
I want to buy you those
That's
headphones
really
that work.
That's really
the She word underwater. I'm telling you, I'm going out, Sasha. I'm buying you those headphones.
Perfect.
I'm giving them to you. Wow. Wow.
So
wow.
It's a lot, eh? Like, at the moment, I'm swimming 10 sessions in the water plus 4 gym. How long can I keep on doing that? Plus, eventually, I have a job. Like, I don't have a job now, but eventually, I want to have a job. It won't, like, it's quite hot, tough.
Okay. So, you saying that you're potential time frame is 24 years old because either you're going to be bored of the line at the bottom of the pool, you want to go and pursue other things, mm-hmm. or is it going to physically be too demanding?
I always want to pursue other things, I think. And at the same time, it's like, I am satisfied. I want to finish satisfied with what I've done in my career, that I say, okay, I don't need to like continue. Like, I enjoy swimming. I could go obviously and do a session here and there, but like not competitively. I don't think so.
That is, oh wow, that's a completely different, I mean, these guys are planning on still running at 95 and Danica may or may not invite Jemima over for a wheelchair session, whatever that happens. But you're saying, no, actually, you know what? I want to finish up at 24 or thereabouts. Mm-hmm. So, which beautifully leads me on to another question. What would be your absolute ultimate goal to achieve?
Honestly, getting this A time for the LA 2028 to be my last Olympics and I'm done. Honestly, that's like the dream. But like, it's really hard. It's really tough to have 3 Olympic Games like no other swimmer has on it.
Are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
I can't.
Actually Andrew Katkuti, but it was with a wild card. If you qualify, it's like a major thing. Like, no one has done it yet. As in, I don't think, because they're mostly mentioning that for LA, they want one qualifier mm-hmm. to go. Hopefully, I will try my best to be that, but it's really, really tough. Like, I'm telling you, it's like near impossible.
So to go and anything else to do with that, this is the goal. This is uh-huh. the ultimate dream, to go to the third yes. Olympics.
Yes.
That is insane. I can't tell you how much I'm rooting for you.
Thank you.
Jemima, do you still have a goal that you haven't fulfilled, that you've got there, that you'd really like to accomplish?
I still feel that I can run so much better in the marathon than I have. So.
But you won.
I know, but it's not just about winning, is it? You know, a marathon is not about winning.
Okay.
So look, why would there be 10,000 people running, or sorry, 60,000 people running the London Marathon? Mm-hmm. They're not all expecting to win it, are they? majority, like hardly any of them are.
No, I just wanted to not die.
Exactly. But you're running it for your own personal goal at the end of the day.
Yes.
And that's what a marathon is about.
Okay, so that's an amazing off tangent for a second. So your goal when you're running is not necessarily to win, but to run the best that you, to beat yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I remember I won the Edinburgh Marathon and I was so disappointed. I was so disappointed in myself because I ran really poorly and I didn't run the time that I wanted to do. So I couldn't even really appreciate the win because that wasn't my goal. So
that is insane. That's amazing. So you won, but you ran poorly in what respect? Just your gait or your cadence or what?
I think I went out a little bit too hard and then I bonked really bad.
Okay, so you went too fast and then you...
died a bit.
Okay. Oh, wow. Fair enough. So what? I'm kind of speechless because you have won so many and accomplished so much. In which case, what would be the goal? What would be the ultimate goal for you?
I don't know if I can say what the ultimate goal is, because if you achieve one thing, then the goal changes, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course it does. Yes,
it moves.
Yes.
So,
but there's not a particular marathon. There's not like New York or anything like that you absolutely have said, one day I really want to do that.
No, I mean, I'm going to run the Valencia Marathon in December and I definitely have some goals for that. So we'll see how that goes.
I'm going to be so cheering you on for that. I'm going to be watching so closely. So this is in December.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Okay, cool. Danica, have you achieved every goal or is there anything still left for you?
I think what major goals I've had a chance to, I think I've done it, like with the Commonwealth Games, getting to a second Commonwealth Games was the same thing. Like no one's ever done it, although the male Keita also did the same thing as me. There were goals that maybe I would have wished to do, but as I said, there was no support, no guidance, no knowledge when I was younger. So like even like if I look in hindsight, an Olympics probably was a potential. Even when I look at someone I raced with the Commonwealth Games that I beat and she was in the Olympics and she was not even the last one, I say I could have been there, but I didn't know how the process worked. No one guided me. So that was maybe a disappointment. In hindsight, because I thought that for an Olympics, you know, you just get selected, you know, like, are you going to go to an Olympics? It doesn't work that way. You have to get points.
Yeah, but at the time, I mean, I don't blame
her. No one would guide you.
Exactly, triathlon, as in, I don't think it was ever represented by Malta.
No, because you have to have one funding. Doesn't exist. You have to spend 2 years before racing around the world to get points. And you have to get a certain ranking within this, but no one told me this when I was racing, and I only learned this when I was older and saying, ah, if that one I have beaten her, but she made it to an Olympics and I probably could have done the same thing. And then you find that, yeah, that she's gone through this like 2-3 year process of collecting points, like you've got like FINA points.
She has basically the same thing in swimming,
but I had no one to guide me and to show me this or even tell me this.
It's upsetting.
So that was upsetting. Possibly I missed chance, but it's gone, it's closed, and it's fine. I think I'm happy with what I managed.
That's amazing. So happy with what you managed. Nothing still outstanding. No, there's not like a little secret goal.
There may be. I mean, but I say I'm happy with what I achieved. Fantastic. And what kind of, I still find different goals nowadays. Like I said, like with this age group racing, it's becoming really competitive. Because like you're getting a lot sometimes of like retired professionals. So now you are like on an equal level ground where they're not on funding, they're working now, not on full time. So you're like at par with them, and that par with them is like, ah, sometimes I can actually beat these old professionals because we're at par, because now we're working, you know, we're not full time athlete and me working. So it makes it interesting, and you still get to see and race against these big athletes, which is nice. So I just try to find different goals and keep myself motivated to keep myself there.
That is absolutely awesome. Ladies, I'm going to ask my last question. And it's your closing thoughts, because each one of you at the table, and even just a moment ago, Jemima, you dropping that gold nugget that I is processing in my brain about it not being winning, but how well you take part. Each of you all the way throughout the show have
drop these incredible golden nuggets, I call them, which could apply to so many more areas than just sports. They could apply to general life, to business, to family, to mm-hmm. everything. But they work in sports as well. And you know, we all want, I think, as a nation, to excel more in sports. And also, I have such a passion to see more people become involved in sports. I started off by saying that the statistics said that only 7% of the Maltese nation consider themselves to take part in sports. And I just want to come back, before we come to the final question, I'm just prepping you that there is a final question for your closing thoughts. So your parting thoughts from this conversation, either something about yourself or something that you'd recommend to people that are even considering sports. But I want to come back to something that we said before we sat down at this table, which was, Danica, when I gave you that statistic, you're like, no, that's definitely wrong. But one of the most beautiful things you said is that people come into your clinic and they don't consider themselves athletes or taking part in sports because they just go for a jog on the seafront three times a week.
Yes. So, yes, my sports medicine clinics, I get quite often, actually, which is like a bit sad, I think. But people will come in and with some kind of pain, injury, I don't know, knee, ankle, back, whatever it is. And they'll come in and they tell me, because I'm not an athlete, but I like to go running. Or they say, I'm not an athlete like you. So they're either comparing themselves to me and maybe at my level. But I don't look down on them because I tell them, no, you are an athlete. You go running. You are an athlete. So I want to get the idea that if you are active, even if it's once a week, twice a week, if you just go a swim here and there, that you're physically active, you are an athlete. And to get into that mentality that you are an athlete, not just, oh, I just do this, I just do that. The positive mindset, it helps.
Yeah, absolutely. It comes back to what you guys were saying about that most important moment of your day is getting yourself out of bed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I loved what you were saying. It's like once you're out of bed, that's it. You're going to get there. And I think for so many of us, we underestimate how difficult, I know I do, how difficult that moment to get out of bed is. And if you've done it and you've gone for a run, or you've gone to play football, or you've done it, no one can take that away from you. It's still a massive accomplishment because you got out of bed. Because we all know, even if you go to bed at 9 o'clock, getting out of bed at 4 a.m. in the morning is tough, is really, really tough. Yes. So really, as we should be considering ourselves more, that what we accomplish is more significant, even if it's only once a week or once a fortnight, or you know, go for a run through. It's still a huge accomplishment, right?
I always say they're beating all the ones on the couch.
There you go.
Simple.
Is that your parting thought? Because I that was absolutely beautiful. What is your parting thought? What is your closing thought?
I'll mention a person. Well, she probably wouldn't mind saying her name. This person I got to know actually first in my clinics, but now she's become kind of a friend, Hilda. She had breast cancer. She overcame it and she decided she's changing her life. She started to learn how to cycle. She's learned how to swim. She's learned how to run. And now she's done her first aquathlon and she's like, I came dead last. I thought about you beating all the ones on the couch. She's 50 plus. She's done it.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Absolutely fantastic. What's her name?
Hilda.
Well done, Hilda. Cheers to you. Absolutely brilliant. Ah, Jemima. Any closing thoughts? What drives you? What's your closing thoughts for this?
Well, as I mentioned, like often I run to work and I've had so many patients that come in and see me and they've said, oh, you know, I saw you running and I started doing this. And now recently I've started seeing them when I'm running to work, exercising as well. And honestly, like it's the best thing to see, you know, it's just so inspiring to see them doing something that they found that they enjoy doing. A lot of people come back and like, you know, overall, they're just feeling a lot better in themselves and their mental state. And, you know, to play any kind of part in that, it's just fantastic.
That's you inspired them and they're inspiring you back. Mm-hmm. I love that. That is so cool. What a great closing thought. Sasha, you're coming last, I'm afraid. Closing thoughts and inspiration.
As they all said, like they both said, it's an individual sport. So like we are always trying to improve and be better on ourselves, basically, and try to improve our times and competing at other major events. And how I said, like, I had that kind of peak at a very young age, then a plateau, and then I kind of got up again. I have this actually tattooed on my body. Everything happens for a reason. And it's like really, like, actually stuck with me, because it was a point where I was giving up, but I was like, okay, like, that happened. Now it's time to, like, to move forward. And I believe that everything that happens, it's for a reason, for sure.
Well, absolutely. Cheers. I'm going to chin-chin to each of you for your successes that you've had and the ones that you are aiming for. I'm going to be thinking of each of you as you go forward in the sport. And thank you so much for sharing so much inspiration at this table.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
That's it. We're done.